Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Doug hates candy wrappers, screaming baby sticky seeds with 50 as in popcorn kernels in his teeth. There's still not one that he won't see, 'cause Doug loves movies.
Hey everybody, my name is Doug and I love movies. This is Doug Loves Movies. As the title of this not-so-mini-mini-ep suggests, on Wednesday, June 19th, Two Oceans 13, I got to go to the Landmark Theater in Los Angeles and conduct a Q&A with the director, cast, and cinematographer of a little gem that I've already told you about called The Kings of Summer. It's playing now in places I'm going to be soon, like Scottsdale, Arizona, San Diego, San Francisco, New Orleans, Minneapolis, Austin, Milwaukee, and more. And more cities will be added on Friday, and even more cities on July 5th. So go to thekingsofsummermovie.com to see if it's playing near you, and if possible, see the movie before listening to this. There are no major spoilers, but there's lots of little ones. Enjoy!
Hey, everybody! That was Kings of Summer, as you know, and a lot of the people involved in making this movie are here tonight. I'm Doug Benson. For anybody who doesn't know me, I have a podcast called Doug Loves Movies, and I was fortunate enough to see the movie a few weeks ago and have on two of the guys that are here tonight, and we'll bring them out. But first, let's bring out the director of the movie, Jordan Vogt Roberts, is here.
Hey, thank you guys for coming out. Like I said, you guys are supporting independent cinema, and that's a big deal. If you like this movie, please help us spread the word about it. Because with movies this size, one or two people actually makes a big difference.
And what's the where are we at for the listeners of the podcast? You know, obviously, you don't need to tell these people where they can see it, but it's still expanding into more cities pretty much each week?
Or? We're expanding. Last week, we got our ass kicked by a little movie that no one's ever heard of called Man of Steel. So I think that's screwing up our expansion right now. But yeah, we're in like 60 cities right now. You can go to our website, and it'll tell you where it's playing.
KingsofSummer.com?
TheKingsofSummerMovie.com.
Yeah. I love how they always have to stick movie
at the end, yeah.
Because some jerk went and grabbed The Kings of Summer as soon as he heard that was a movie.
Actually, the best part about it is people were so nervous about this movie. And the fact that there are like kids swearing and kids drinking, and the kids, the Kings of Summer is a legitimate Corona ad campaign right now. So I think if you go to the kingsofsummer.com, it's like a Corona party.
That's funny, because I think Bellagio is the most interesting man in the world.
And then there's
this, oh, there's a thing at the end.
There's a tag.
There's at the scene end. At the end, and we're missing it.
There's a Marvel-esque tag at the end of the movie. We're setting up the Avengers of Kings of Summer.
It's just more, it's extra footage of Bellagio. Bellagio. Biagio.
Biagio. Do you want me to bring these guys up?
Yeah, let's bring everybody up here.
All right, so we have our wonderful cast here. First, I want to bring out Gabe Basso, who plays Patrick. Next.
Hey, dude. Nice to meet you.
The very wonderful Joe Toy, a.k.a. Nick Robinson. And then the very odd creature.
Good to see you again. I've been good.
They're
have a seat,
up.
Grab a microphone. He's just chatting with me over here.
He's high. The very odd creature. Biagio. Moises Arias.
Moises actually, he won the movie game we play on the show when he was on. He was...
My favorite question I get all the time is like, so Biagio, the kid who plays him, is a weirdo, right? And it's like, yeah, but in a totally different way.
Yeah.
He's a thug. And then next, Mark Evan Jackson, who plays Mr. Keenan. Woo!
Hey, dude. Nice to see you.
And primarily nice because job. I like embarrassing him, a very dear friend of mine and a huge part of this movie, Ross Righi, the DP. So we kind of have a ragtag
hey, Ross.
People here.
Nice to see you. Let me just jot that down. Late edition, Ross Righi. How do you spell it?
R-I-E-G-E. It's like Rige.
It's like Rige or yeah. Righi?
Yeah, I realize I've been pronouncing your last name wrong forever. I'm so sorry. Like yeah, I've been right. saying Rige.
That's right. I'm a man of many names.
It's tough for some 17-year-olds to bum us out, so it's okay.
Where did you, Jordan, where did you find Ross, or how did that collaboration get going?
We met like 6-7 years ago now at this point. I used to shoot all my own stuff, and I'm super hands-on and kind of an asshole because of it. And I didn't want to shoot my own stuff anymore. And he was at the same agency as me, and I went to them, and I was shooting this short film called Successful Alcoholics, and I wanted someone to do it. And I got a bunch of like great commercial reels. These guys that look fucking incredible. And I was like, why would they want to do this? And they're like, well, these guys make a bunch of money. They want to do something cool. And there's this one reel in the pile that was definitely like a little more rough around the edges and raw, but it was like way more exciting and definitely felt hip. And we've just been working together ever since. And he's kind of like what saved me in this whole process of losing
my mind. So he shot Successful Alcoholics?
Yeah.
Nice. That's a terrific film as well. It's short. It's like 25
minutes.
And stars one of the biggest banes of my existence, TJ Miller.
Mine too.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
He's a nut. Like he's like he's kind of Biagio like, but he's a real person.
Yeah, I mean, I feel
it's
like
not a tremendous performance by a talented young
I
actor
say in a public environment, but to describe him as the bane, as long as we can just both agree to describe him as the banes of our existence, that's great.
Yeah, he's he's troublesome. he's a troublemaker, but hilarious dude.
He talked shit about me by name in GQ magazine. That's shit. That's true. First time I was ever in GQ magazine. Well, my parents pick up a GQ magazine to read, and it's this guy talking shit about me for no reason unrelated to what they're talking about. It's great. Really good.
I would like to really dig into this, but there's such a big panel here that maybe haven't even met TJ Miller.
Oh, man, what a douche.
I know.
Yeah, he just comes on my show and is one of the top 3 or 4 most obnoxious guests, and I have to have him back because the listeners love it. They love how frustrated I get with him.
Beautiful.
But let me ask you guys specific questions about the movie, starting with Nick Robinson. Monopoly. It's a big plot point in the movie that you play Monopoly a few times in the story. Had you ever played prior to playing this role?
I had, actually.
Oh, okay.
It was, yeah. It was. I didn't actually play it anymore in like preparation or anything, but it was certainly a very cool, cool time. I had a good time. No, Monopoly was
so
great.
High. You're so high.
What? No, I'm not. You're high. But yeah, no. That actually, that scene was one of the first ones I'd shot with Nick Offerman, and it was just he's a machine. He's hilarious.
Yeah, he's a very funny dude, and a lot of ruined takes for laughing at.
Yeah, that was rough because that whole we like basically set aside that whole day for that scene. Just because we knew it was an important one. So we had like 6 or 8 hours just to do that Monopoly scene. And I mean, the kids in general, I just threw them under the bus because you've got Mark and Megan Mullally and Allison Brie and Eugene Cordero and these incredible comedians. And then you've got these guys that I'm just like, all right, keep a straight face.
Yeah, don't laugh at their crazy antics.
Yeah.
But that's like finally an intense Monopoly game in a motion picture because I've never gotten through a fucking Monopoly game without somebody getting pissed at somebody.
Yeah, I mean...
It gets personal.
It gets personal. If we really wanted to be accurate, I feel like it would be Risk, just because I don't think I've ever...
Yeah, dude, Risk
I've never exited like a game of Risk being friends with those people.
Were there any things like that, any choices in the movie that you had to go a way that you didn't want to go because of like the rights or something? Like, is it hard to...
Boston Market was on board, although it was just the greatest story. It's not really the greatest story. It's like a
media
story.
Yeah, that's a big build-up.
Yeah, you really set yourself up for a fall there.
This is just shit. At one point in the movie...
so cool.
At one point in the movie, the guy at the party, when he shoots the gun right now, he says, "You little shits." And he used to say, "You little cunts." And that's just terribly offensive for no reason, and I love it. And and we went to Boston Market. For some reason, CBS went to Boston Market to be like, "Hey, do you want to like sponsor this movie? Do you want to do like a tie-in meal or something?"
Yeah, in case they start serving rabbit.
Right, exactly. And Boston Market, I guess, initially came back and was like, "Yeah, you know, maybe we could do this. Like, we could do this." And then they were just like, "Wait, is the word cunt in your movie?" "Yeah, no, we can't be involved with this at all."
That's just a random question. That's the one word they're concerned about?
No, I think it occurred to them after the fact that they were like, "Oh, right, I think I heard someone say cunt."
Oh, okay. But you didn't say, "We're changing it to shit."
No, that's just on their bullet points of like general deal memos at Boston Market. Do you say the word cunt?
Nick also does, in fact, have to. There's a pretty gnarly section of the movie where he's dealing with preparing a rabbit, and was you'd never done that before, right?
No, I'd never skinned a rabbit before.
Did you feel very Jennifer Lawrence in that sequence? Because she, of course, did similar shit to a squirrel in that movie.
The...
I don't want to drop any other movie names right now. We're concentrating on Kings of Summer in theaters.
You were into it, because I approached him about
it. Okay, no, don't say into it. That's, like, way too... That's creepy. Like, that's...
No, you said you were, like, an Inuit. Like,
yeah, you're, like, an Inuit.
I was not said that you
were really, really excited about the rabbit skinning scene.
So, he told me that he, like, grew up watching a bunch of, like, Bear Grylls and Man vs. Wild.
Yeah,
so he was
that's
really
true,
into
but
it.
I wasn't into it.
All right, he was open to the idea when I said to him, "I want you to really do this." And his mom was not into that. I don't think to this day his mom has watched
it. Yeah, she hasn't seen that scene once.
The best thing about it was just that we shot in Ohio, and which was like great for a lot of reasons, and also had, you know, when you shoot anywhere, it has its own unique issues. But the best thing about Ohio for the production was you could just post on Craigslist and be like, "Does anyone have a dead rabbit?" And then people are like, "I got a dead rabbit."
That's so weird. They're looking at Craigslist, but they raise their hand.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, well, I mean,
it's very old-fashioned. It's more like Craigslist is just a guy with a list of people with rabbits.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gabriel, can I get you a cold washcloth is the first thing I wanted to ask you, because that is the funniest thing a parent has ever offered
if you have one,
a child and his friend. That is hilarious. Was that like a Megan Mullally riff? Or
no, that's the writer, Chris Galletta, who lives in New York.
My grandma has done this to me like all the time. I swear to God, I'm not actually kidding.
I've never
just,
had this
so, yeah,
can I get I you a
relate.
Cold
this
washcloth?
My grandma. Yeah, she gave me like a cold washcloth and... Like, she, like, fluffs the pillows and, like, puts the cold washcloth, like, over the pillow.
Wait,
and,
you get a cold washcloth in bed?
Yeah. That's, like, how it works. You get a cold washcloth and you lay down.
Just because someone tells you that's how it works doesn't mean you should go along with this. You got a lot to learn. They're teenagers, guys. They don't know. But that's Chris. That's the writer. That's like his weird. That's like Megan Mullally in. First of all, Chris the writer basically is Biagio to a T. They even look similar. But Chris,
for the record, he would never say that.
He would never say that. He would never admit that.
Yeah, that's a diss to Moises here, though.
Whoa!
No, sorry, I was kidding.
Chris is very on the record as saying like Megan Mullally is his mother. Like the dialogue that comes out of her mouth. And we did a lot of improv and we did a lot of riffing, but that washcloth thing and the whole like Will Smith thing, those are all like based on real conversations, like of his mom just not getting it.
Yeah, I think Mark, it's just I think the camera's not even on you at that point, but I think you call Hancock Hemlick or something, or
Heimlich. Yeah.
Heimlich. That makes a little bit more sense than Hemlick, but. If you, and like you said, Mark plays kind of, he's Megan's husband, and they're just weird parents. I mean, I guess there's a lot of things that are similar to, you know, all of our, you know, lives with our parents, but they're particularly a strange couple, I thought.
Thank you.
In a fun way, yeah.
I think that they are a really common couple. I mean, you know, it wasn't hard to tap into very recent seeming memories of my own parents asking me stupid questions like, so you decided to wear the blue shirt, not the one with the pocket. Like, that's just one of those things. That's a scripted line in the movie, and it's one of those great questions. That's one of the first things that made me fall in love with the script. It was like, that really tapped into that question that you, it instantly transported me to being 15 again to go like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, A, why do you care, and what? Like...
But that's what's so interesting about it to me is that. But he, you know, this you develop a rash because of the parents. And, but they're always very sweet and silly and like so. It's interesting that you have that the you're able to make it seem like yeah he'd need to get away from those people, you know, because like there's more issues with you know Joe and his dad, right? Like those are more like. Well-defined in terms of, like, why a kid would run away from home.
Right, well, at the end of the day, both of the kids, I think, like, when you take a step back, like, you should be so lucky, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe's problems are a little more intense, but, like...
They're still... They're
not really, though. Like, I would take my dad over Patrick's parents, like, any day of the week.
Disagree.
That's so hilarious.
I don't know, man.
They're so nice, though. No, they're saying a lot of fucked up shit, though, even though they're being real nice while they're doing it.
Those dinner table scenes, too, like the Hancock one, that was at like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning.
It was later than
and
that.
He couldn't keep a straight face, and I was just trying.
I was eating... That burger was cooked for like 20 seconds in the microwave. Keep in mind, our prop department was like fired immediately after that scene for feeding me that. But I was force-feeding myself raw hamburger meat to not laugh. I was like, I can't do this.
Seems like
you
the
got
end,
mad at me.
The,
and you,
the
you're busting up laughing behind camera. I hear
I'm
all
allowed
that laughing,
to.
And I'm the only one that's like trying to keep a straight face. God damn it.
Yeah. I'm allowed to laugh.
Ross, how's it going?
I'm great.
I just want to make sure you get a question in.
Holding down the left side over here.
What were there? Were there any particular you know challenges to shooting the woods of Ohio?
Absolutely everything.
Yeah. Was it difficult?
Very difficult. We had 6-day weeks, which to begin with is tough. And then on the 7th day, our director, Jordan, asked us to go out again and shoot. And we can all speak for that. So there was very little rest.
Slave driver.
Obviously very worth it. But we all in certain ways became our own zombies during this production and managed to function somehow.
Yeah.
You were the nicest zombie ever, though. Like, you were always in the best mood. Like, it was... I don't know how you did it. It was actually... blew my mind.
Ross is allowed to be in a good mood, so I don't have to be.
Yeah. I got to balance out Jordan. Yeah.
Yeah. While watching, I next to Biagio's name, I wrote down formal dance training. Moises, what's your... How do you move... How do you do that?
Juilliard School of Dance at 3.
quite the prodigy.
You know, none of that shit's in the script either.
Like, yeah. It doesn't say, and then Biagio dances like the weirdest dance you've ever seen.
None of that's in
Ross,
the script.
Yeah, what Ross just said, the seventh day, our first day off, Jordan took us three guys, them two and the rider, into the woods. It sounds very creepy, yes, but we just started, you know, banging on the pipe.
Also sounds creepy. Yeah, that whole day was improvised. The whole pipe sequence.
Improvised
in the movie.
Pipe dance.
Yeah, we just went out there. The audio from that scene is recorded on my iPhone. That's just like guerrilla filmmaking. It's happened.
The music, or whatever you'd call it, from the pounding on the pipe was
music.
Is a repeated motif throughout the film. But that's not composed by anybody. That's just something that guys riffed.
That just happened on our first day off, and as soon as it happened, there are so few moments on a set where you actually feel like occasionally you capture something that you're like, this is good, this is exciting, that's going to work, that's going to be okay. We need to, you know, we're going to have to fix it in the edit or whatever. Very rarely do you come across a moment where you're like, oh, that's special, that's fucking magic, you know, like that's movie magic, and you're watching it. And that was one of those things when we put them on the pipe that just kind of unfolded. Like I said, it's on my audio.
For the listeners to the podcast, they're standing on a giant pipe. They didn't like put them on a, you know, put them on the pipe. Sounds like you got them to smoke some crack.
We put them on the pipe. Took
we got them all hooked on the pipe and then just bang out a tune, boys.
Put them on the pipe, took them to the woods, and just banged.
For the listeners to the podcast, the three boys are smoking crack right now.
As soon as we shot that, I just started rethinking the entire movie. And I just knew that was something special. And so we started rejiggering it. And, you know, a lot, like, I didn't know, there's no violin in the script. I just found out he could do it. You know, Moises is just incredibly talented as a dancer. And it's like, yeah, Biagio, why wouldn't he be able to dance?
But Patrick's foot injury, that was in the script.
That's a script.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't one of those deals where, like, he showed up on the set with a fucked up foot, and you're like, oh, got to rewrite some pages.
Got to change some shit.
Got to fix that. Was that weird walking around with that thing on?
It was miserable. Like, by the end, to be completely honest, like, yeah, I have this guy tell me to do everything, you know, Moises and Nick are doing, it, except in a boot. And so he was like, sprint down the field. And I was like, I'm in a boot.
Yeah, I saw the slow motion running scenes. It's like, that guy really has a thing on his foot.
But he's super competitive is the best part. So he'll be like, yeah, I'm going to do this, and then bitch about it later. So he'll do it.
I never bitched about anything.
Until right now, later. I didn't say how much later.
It'll happen.
So Jordan... The title got switched at some point in the process of this movie, and I'm just curious how that happened. And
it used to be, when we premiered at Sundance, it was called Toys House, which on one hand is a title that I loved. On the other hand, no one is used to the possessive form of the word toy, and people would, like, literally, like, out of Sundance, we would have reviews that would come out, and it would call it Toys House, and then by the third paragraph, they were calling our movie Toy Story. It was like, so it's this weird thing where some people love the title, some people... In fact, when Offerman got brought on board, he pitched me a bunch of weird alt titles that were like Pussy Canyon and weird things. Just like weird Offerman titles. Like
he just shows up, yeah. I'm not happy with this title.
Yeah, just like...
We're going to have to discuss some options.
The Frank Toy Story. just like weird shit like that. And we always knew it was sort of a thing, but then... CBS,
Toys in the Attic?
Toys in the
would
Attic.
Would be good. If it wasn't taken already.
Just weird
shit.
So
it wasn't like any kind of studio or any kind of pressure?
No, CBS
something.
Came in later.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I will say this freely. I found out about the title change via Deadline Hollywood. So, yeah.
I don't understand that reaction from the audience, but two or three people are disgusted with Deadline Hollywood. Yeah, so... Switch the title, and
they did market testing, and it was this weird thing where they just found that more people would be willing to go to see a movie called Kings of Summer than Toys House, and not even by that much, by like 10%. But the weird thing was on the exit polling when they were like, "All right, now that you've seen the movie, do you feel like Toys House is a better title than Kings of Summer?" It was even. They were like, "Yeah, we feel like they're both fine titles."
It is kind of a spoiler that there's going to be a house.
I don't think
and
so.
And as it is, I was disappointed they never became royalty. But But I did like the fact that no one at any point in the film, you know, because of that sequence of events, no one had the opportunity to have the line yelling out, like, we're the kings of summer, right, and jump into the lake or something.
Yeah. Come on back to Toy's house. Pussy Canyon.
Yeah. No, it's Pussy Canyon, Canyon. So, that's all. That was the interesting story to me, or I mean, I thought it might be an interesting story, and turns out it was.
Our writer to
this
day still calls it Toy's house.
But there's that moment. I was going to say there was that moment where Moises, as Biagio, is standing in the shopping cart with his arms out, as if he's about to say, "I'm the king of the world." So it is sort of in there, okay. I think. Everyone's nodding in agreement for the.
I thought he was going to say Pussy Canyon. That's what he looks like. He's going to say,
"That's what I say every time I'm in a shopping cart." Oh yeah, this is Pussy Canyon.
Offerman's notes in general were amazing because they were all these things. It was like he'd be like, "You know, a snake wouldn't behave that way." I'm like, you know, it's totally unrealistic that the boyfriend would be wearing a tool belt and driving the truck at the same time. No one does that. It's like, all right, dude, you're a man. I'm not. I'm a boy. I get it. I don't know about these things, like survival things. They were all incredible weird notes.
Yeah, he's an intimidating figure.
Yeah.
Where the hell is he tonight?
He's with his lovely
wife. What's his excuse?
Oh,
the two of them blowing you off in your hour of need.
Yeah, that's what they do.
But I'm thrilled to have all you guys here, and I would like to ask a question before opening it up to any audience questions that are out there that I ask on every episode of my podcast. Nick and Moises have already been through this, but let's start with Ross on the end down there, crack cinematographer. What have you seen lately? Have you been to the movies lately?
I have been to the movies lately.
What'd you see? Man of Steel? This is the End?
The most recent movie I saw was This is the End.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that?
I
don't mean to put you on the spot. Let me just ask you, how was the cinematography in This is the End?
I appreciated it. I think it actually, for a comedy, I think we're in a world that comedies aren't giving emphasis to the way they're shot, and I think that they, you know, they at least looked at that and took that seriously.
I think yours and that your movie and that movie are probably the most hilarious movies that also have lens flares that are playing, playing
lots
in
of
theaters
lens flares,
this summer.
I appreciate lens flares.
Yeah.
Okay, like you could have said good looking or textured or anything, but just lens.
Well, I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, I'm not sure if I'd say that about the other movie, but yeah, of course, the cinematography in this movie is beautiful.
You were all about the flares. So
I love lens flares.
Like every time there'd be a sunset, oh, flare, and we'd like stop shooting and get the flare.
Well,
we
did the math. There's actually, if you break it down, there's a flare once per minute in this movie. So
that can't possibly be true.
It's not actually once per minute, but sometimes they happen. There's 92 flares in the movie. We counted. There's 92 lens flares.
I was
going
to say, that's the
movie.
Only reason I'd go back to see This is the End, to do a flare count.
I would have guessed 50 at most if asked that. I thought I saw it 3 or 4 times, and that's why I was being so clever bringing it up.
92.
But 92 times.
Yep.
That's a fun drinking game.
You'd be dead.
Next time I see that movie. Mark, what have you been to lately?
I think the most recent movie I've seen was To the Wonder.
Yeah.
Terrence Malick movie.
Yeah, did you like that?
I did. The water.
It was gorgeous, yeah. It was very spare and lovely.
Do you enjoy all of Malick's work?
You know, I will admit that I didn't know much about it until meeting Jordan. And when he found out that I hadn't known that much about Terrence Malick, he put our friendship on hold until I studied up. So, yeah, becoming a giant fan.
Tree of Life?
Yes.
Moises is saying yes to Tree of Life.
Incredibly trippy. Just.
And what have you seen lately, Moises? Have you been to the...
Yeah, I saw Man of Steel.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I wish I could say it was really, really good, but it was okay. It was okay.
All right. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard mixed things, so it's a fair assessment.
Yeah. I don't want to trash on it, but it was decent.
This kid is slick. Nick, what about you?
This is the end too, actually.
Oh, they already made that? Oh my god. They just greenlight shit so fast these days.
I know. I got a pre-screening. It's really cool. Like, just gonna blow your mind.
It ends twice.
It's crazy. It flares like at least 130 times.
Damn.
Hold up.
But no, it was good. I laughed. That was what I came to do, was to laugh, and I did. So
I'm here to laugh, everybody.
I'm here to laugh.
Make that announcement to the theater. Yeah. Well, also the thing about Kings of Summer that like you may not get, the trailer's pretty funny, but it's consistently funny throughout. Like it's very it's do you call it a comedy or do you can't call it a rom-com, obviously.
It's not really a rom-com.
Even though those boys do fall in love with Biagio.
I think you have to call it a comedy. And you probably have to like then even go another level down and be like, it's a coming of age comedy. But like I don't think that represents what it is. Because I do, like at the beginning when I prefaced the intro, I was like, it's sort of a really weird movie and it's not. And I think that there's stuff in this movie that is very...
That was an interesting thing to put into our heads. It's weird, but it's not. Enjoy. Because it is. It's quirky, but it's also relatable at the same time.
There's also just like absurd stuff. And like I just wanted to make something that was like a throwback to like Amblin movies and John Hughes movies, and then basically make like a really dumb Terrence Malick movie, which is to say like have impressionistic and ethereal elements and match dick jokes.
Yeah, it's artsier than your typical John Hughes movie.
But then like I think there's really weird alt comedy in that, like all the stuff with Thomas Middleditch and then Marilyn Rice Cub as the cops, just like fucking, there's crazy, and Biagio.
I think
like,
Thomas Middleditch studied T.J. Miller before playing that part.
I
think he was channeling him or something. Yeah, and Marilyn Rice comes very, very funny, and Kumail Nanjiani has a funny scene where he shows up.
Like Hannibal Buress shows up.
Hannibal Buress, I love when he's like, what's that, a pager? Who's got a pager?
No. That dude had a beeper.
That dude had a beeper.
Is that a beeper?
That had to be you, right? Biagio had a beeper.
Yeah, Biagio had a beeper.
Of course he did. And but that was. I hope everyone listening to this as a podcast is watches the movie first. Like, go see it somewhere and then listen to this. This is a weird time to tell people that. But I hope that's what happens because of what I'm about to say. When Biagio asks his dad those questions,
right.
I like to imagine that Biagio just returned home and the father never noticed he was gone.
In my mind, the dad had no idea he was
gone. Yeah, and he was just shaving, and oh, yes, he just asked me some questions like he does sometimes. It's been a while.
But also, that scene was written in English, and Moises is Colombian, and he made great strides in telling me he was from Colombia about 30 times. And so one day I just put him to the test and was like, all right, dude, do the first half of the scene. Do this whole scene in Spanish except the last line. And it's so weird because that character should be Italian and he's speaking Spanish. And then the last line, but the dad's responding in English. It's like the weirdest thing.
It is pretty weird now that you mention it.
Yeah, but the dad had no idea he was gone at all.
All right. I can live with that assessment. Who do I leave off at? Gabriel, have you been to the movies?
Yeah, I saw Man of Steel. It was decent.
Whoa.
Wow.
Like,
this is smart. You're getting people to check out your movie. Like, you know, just talk down every other movie.
I'm not saying
RCG is way better. Like the snake CG? Yeah. Kills it.
You had a real snake running around in that.
We had a real snake running around.
One that actually could hurt somebody?
No, it didn't have fangs and it wasn't venomous.
It was a gopher snake.
It's a gopher snake, apparently. It was a real pain in the ass. Never did anything I wanted it to do. Yeah.
Bit the wrong actor. So
they wouldn't even
rewrite the scene.
We didn't feed that snake for like 2 weeks, which is like a normal thing in snake training. It makes them aggressive. And then he showed up on set and like, what do they call it when they kill the mouse? Thumping it?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what Jungle Terry
called. So our animal trainer's name was Jungle Terry. And he drove around in a
zebra-printed Range Rover.
Yeah.
And dressed in various safari regalia.
And just yelled at people, welcome to Jurassic Park.
Welcome to Jungle Terry. Yeah, it's fucking weird. Yeah, that snake sucked.
All right. I think we've run out of time, actually, but let's get...
Let's get some audience questions.
Yeah, let's get a couple of quick ones, because no one's given me the stop now.
Awesome. I didn't get to answer the movie I saw.
Okay, we've been told whatever. We have 3 minutes, so speed round of audience questions. This gentleman right up front
real
here.
Real fast.
Just yell it out real loud.
I was just wondering, I thought the first half...
Okay, we don't have time for your critical assessment of the motion picture.
How did you balance the tone from being hilarious to being really serious throughout the movie?
How'd you balance the serious and...
If you watch my short film Successful Alcoholics, it does something similar where it starts off really funny and then gets really dramatic and then ping-pongs back and forth. I'm going to speed through these questions. It's just testing. You know, it's always about making it real and grounded and about something and ideally rooting it in these characters. And then it takes a lot of testing and revising in the editing process to make sure the audience is willing to go on that path.
Thanks for that question. You're free to go. You, sir.
After a bunch of testings, was there anything that you were surprised the audience reacted to that you didn't think they would react that way?
There's still things when I watch this movie. Do we need to repeat the question?
Did you watch the whole thing this time? The screening?
I've seen this movie like 500 times. It's stupid. I hate this movie.
Yeah, you do have to see it a lot, but laughs in different places.
Yeah, well, there's always things that people laugh at that I'm like, why are you laughing? That's not even a joke. What's going on? The things that I am not only surprised people laugh at, but really happy people laugh at are a lot of the like loose improv things that I really let these guys do and really would bring themselves to it. Like before the camouflage scene, when Patrick exits the house and is swinging that stick around and hits himself in the foot, that's really him hitting himself in the foot.
That was no joke.
You know, and so there's a bunch of weird stuff like that. That you know, like filmmaking's a fluid process, so you never know what people are going to react to. Don, you can go.
Let's ask some of the actors. Have actor questions? Dude right there? Okay, go. Yes, sir.
Okay. Moises, just for the sake of the podcast listeners, I was hoping maybe you could just bust a quick move for us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's saying that for the podcast you should dance, because that's I always like to have things that the listeners just go, what's
so
happening?
I just backflipped, guys.
Yeah.
That was so like slick. That.
Use your imagination.
I got a tweet from somebody after you were on Doug Loves Movies, Moises, and the person said, you know, he was on Hannah Montana. Why didn't you ask him about that? And I said, because I bet you he doesn't give a shit about talking about Hannah Montana. He's probably had enough questions about that.
Well, I mean, you just asked it, so let's get into it.
You know, cancel the 10-10 screening. We're going to talk about Hannah Montana for an hour.
I was 10. I'm 19. Kings of Summer.
Exactly.
I had no idea he was on that show until we were in Ohio at grocery stores and like teenage girls would come up to us crying, being like, are you Rico from Hannah? And I was like, I don't give a shit about that show. I know nothing about that show. But to an entire generation, he's like their Steve Urkel. He was the comic relief on a show
Urkel to millions.
But he's clearly escaped from those shackles and does a great job of, you know, like we're not seeing, what's his name, Jaleel?
Jaleel White.
Yeah, we're not really seeing a lot of him in movies like this, so good job.
Last question.
Well done. One more maybe like a question that everyone could quickly
everyone
give
shout
an
it
answer.
Out at the same time.
Land Trunt.
Was that
Love Offerman?
That was in the script. That is from the mind of Chris Coletta. That's not a question. So,
well.
It's an influence, certainly. The New Yorker referenced that and thought we were okay.
Do you have a few other influences you could mention?
I mean, it's sort of what I was talking about earlier. Look, the influences to me at the end of the day are just, goddamn, being 14 is the best, / thank God I'm done with that. That was the most painful, terrible, awkward time of my life. But it's what makes you who you are. That's the influence.
Have you guys ever seen Speed, the Keanu Reeves movie?
That's how I refer to it every time I bring it up.
Bad Boys 2, Over the Edge, Kids,
This is the
Goonies, Stand By Me.
It was like
John
Kids
Hughes.
Without the AIDS, I thought.
No, the AIDS is there. You just missed an important
plot. It's Biagio. We cut it.
Well, thank you so much to all you guys for doing this. I really appreciate it. Jordan Von Roberts, Nick Robinson, Gabriel.
Is it Basso?
Basso. Yeah. I didn't want to say it the wrong way. Moises Arias, Mark Evan Jackson, and
Ross
Rigi. Rigi. Go see Kings of Summer.
Yeah, thank you for coming out.
Do it.
People listening, it really does make a difference.
As always, podcast listeners. And as always, anyone who doesn't go see Kings of Summer is a shithead.
Is a shithead.
Now it's time for Doug to watch another talkie. Eyes of Gold, his viewing prowess makes him cocky. There's no room in